Hi, and welcome to another episode of Rule of Carnage. This is a podcast, a video series, whatever it is, wherever you're watching it.
Definitely one of those.
Where myself, Glenn Ford, has chats with this guy, Mike Hutchinson.
Hello.
We are both games developers and designers, and we've designed and developed games like Gaslands, A Billion Suns, and Puke Apocalypse. And in relation to Puke Apocalypse specifically, which I'm sort of putting the finishing touches on now as it's going off to the publisher, somebody asked in the Discord why I chose a quite specific setting for Puke Apocalypse. And it's interesting to me because it's a very non-specific setting, sort of, to my mind. So Puke Apocalypse is officially set in Milton Keynes, post the Puke Apocalypse, or at least a place people think might be Milton Keynes. And it's sort of vague as to where it really is, because the signpost that they're using to read has been like made up by somebody anyway. So it could have just been a word someone heard. And for me specifically, Milton, I mean, there's a couple of reasons it's Milton Keynes. One is that it's an obscure 2000 AD Strontium Dogs reference. Two is that for me, it's just a sort of vague stand-in for the whole of suburbia and the whole of sort of the unnamed towns that have sort of, that look like every other town you've ever driven through.
Yeah, it's sort of the default gag in the UK for town without flavour.
Yes,
and it's all heritage because it's a new town.
Yes, yes. And it also features heavily in sort of various post-apocalyptics, like it's where they shot most of Clockwork Orange and things like that. So it has nice geeky references laid in there. But yeah, for me, Puke Apocalypse doesn't have a very specific setting. It's very English in its humour and British in its slang, but that's because I'm English and I write in the slang that I'm most familiar with. But at the same time, it's got an incredibly specific setting. It's very punk. It's very sort of a very specific look. People talk in a very specific way in it and act in a very
specific way. It's not a broad canvas to which you can bring like a huge gamut of different models or stories or kinds of characters. Like, it's very tight. It's these kinds of horrible people dressed in these sorts of shabby clothes with these sorts of diseases and problems.
Exactly, yeah. And so someone was asking me, like, why I decided to make the setting that narrow. And it was interesting to me because I'm not even sure, you know, the game was driven by, like, a certain aesthetic and a certain idea of making that aesthetic work on the tabletop. And to me, it still feels very free and very open. But I don't know where
you mean free and open from a like modeling perspective or from a stories you can tell perspective. Just dig into that a bit more.
I mean, for me, it's the stories you can tell insofar as what happens on the tabletop and the stories that build are going to be very emergent. It's not like you don't come in with a built list and your force has like a super specific, you know, clockwork sort of character. They do certain things a certain way. You more or less get what you're given and you kind of build what their story is on the tabletop. And I was sort of thinking about like where you sort of end up railroading the story of your game versus where you like try and signpost it to your players and help them find it. I was thinking this as well, like in relation to Gaslands and to a certain degree A Billion Suns, because been like in the Gaslands Discord recently, and it's interesting to me that people have various headcanon for like what happens in Gaslands, whether there is Mars or not, whether you can actually go there, all those sorts of things. And I know, Mike, you've been sort of trying to figure out how and whether and where and why to pin down a certain amount of the Gaslands lore. And because the Gaslands lore is very open, again, whilst being incredibly specific. It's about a definitive, it's about this TV show with specific named, like, winners of the TV show, and it works in a certain way in a certain world. But at the same time, you can be racing them in like Japan and Australia and America and
Well, I suppose, yeah, like there's so many things to unpack here. I'm not sure which order to unpack them. So I think the first thing for me is that, like, when you're writing an indie game, I've compared writing an indie game a few times to like writing a short story rather than a novel. It's like making a short film instead of an entire trilogy of movies. And so in that regard, like Puke Apocalypse for me is such a good example of a tight premise that just deals with the things that it needs to deal with in order to explain like the premise and deliver the gag and wrap a cool play experience, specific play experience around that. And for me, that's like super, super tight indie game writing, because the opposite of that would be like sort of starting a short story about like some space pirates on like a rusty bucket that are trying to escape from the police, and then spending like the subsequent 12 pages explaining every part of that universe in grueling detail, even the bits that have absolutely no bearing on the story. And of course, that would be a terrible way to write a short story. And to a degree, that's also like a terrible way potentially to approach an indie miniatures game, is to like set up a GW sized IP for yourself when it's not relevant and it's not needed, and it doesn't really add to the efficiency of the sort of delivering the game loveliness. So that's the one thing. And then the other thing is that Puke Apocalypse and Gaslands, to a degree, share quite a tight tabletop premise. Like the reason that the models are turning up to do the thing is like it's quite plain and simple, and it doesn't need a whole bunch of explanation once you've got the general premise. Like, we are racing to the death, we are fighting over bottles of piss. Like, it's not, you can repeat that premise, you can have that game multiple times without having to build like a deep emergent, like, why am I traveling to this temple to pick up this artifact? Like, there must be a reason, and who are the people who are trying to get it off me? Like, they must have a separate reason and stuff. Like, no, like, we're all racing, it's fine. And so in Gaslands, I've got a really deep sort of understanding of the world and the history of the world and the different places and what they're like, most of which hasn't actually made it out other than in little sort of hints and stuff in the flavor text, partly because a lot of it developed post refueled when I was working for a while on the role-playing game, and when I was working for a while on the various iterations that led to Gaslands Legacy. And so I've got this quite clear picture of like what the war with Mars was like before the apocalypse. And honestly, I'm really excited to explore that in a war game at some point. And I've got this really clear idea about what's happening on Mars, partly because we explored it a little bit in Skulljacker, partly because like thinking about that universe is like it connects to the future universe of a billion suns, and so I have like quite a good understanding of how this all sticks together in quite a grand scale. And so in some respects, like Gaslands is this ancient history of which like there's a cyberpunk world, which is the sort of 4,000 years ago, and then there's the sort of now of a billion suns, almost, in my word. But the problem is that all of that stuff is my imagining of what a post-apocalyptic car combat game needs to be. And some of that stuff isn't welcomed by other people because they have their own idea. They're like, oh, I want to play this movie, or I want to play this comic, or I want to play this sort of invented headcanon of my own. And one of the things that Offspray was very cautious about is putting too much constraints into their game. So when I was writing Gaslands, I was actively encouraged to sort of keep the setting light. And so I guess the question is, did I make it light and specific, or did I make it light and like open and generic? And if I change the balance of where it is, should I write that game again? Like, would that make it better because there'd be more to sink your teeth into, more specifics to bounce off of from a hobby and a gameplay and a storytelling point of view? Or would that make it weaker because it constricts other players' sort of sandbox and imagination and permission to do what they want to do?
I mean, for my sort of personal perspective is that I try not to go too tight because basically I feel like the form of tabletop games doesn't get a lot of payback from going quite tight with like narrative moments. Like if you compare it to a digital game, you can have somebody walking through a hallway in a digital game and they hit a certain trigger point and then a very specific like set piece happens. These things come in at like exact moments, and exactly when one or another thing takes a certain number of hits, another thing comes in, and the thing, and you can have a boss battle with like stages and all that sort of stuff because it can have like really, really sharp trigger points. And so you can have very, very defined narratives, even in the middle of play, even without like cutscenes and breaking away from player control. You can literally go, well, he'll run down this corridor and this will happen and that'll happen and that'll happen and that'll happen in a way that you just can't do, you know, certainly not efficiently in a way that's pleasant to experience by and large with table.
No, and some board games do introduce elements of that, using cards and
You
some of
can
the legacy formats and stuff.
have it to a degree with like
But
things.
it increases the discreteness of the game experience. And as we've talked about before, like the openness, the non-discreteness of like what forces am I using, what terrain are we using, like all of that just kind of it really undermines the ability to get that specific with like a story. Although, saying that out loud, that sort of feels like a challenge rather than a definite no.
Yeah, but potentially. But I think like as a rule of thumb, unless you're like really working very hard to do this specific narrative thing, I think that the losses you take for trying to like railroad things into a particular narrative or be specific on that particular narrative on the tabletop are greater than the gains that you get from it because it's so hard to tell like set pieces and set moments, and because there are so many rewards from an emergent narrative and looser thing and welcoming in people more, and also because I think it's some of the things that people assume from this form. Like people will come to it thinking I'm probably going to have a level of freedom. It's like the probably it's like you said before, probably the tightest like narrative tabletop world is something like GW, where it's like this is exactly what these guys look like and this is exactly what they believe. Here's a book of their
Well,
personal
it's yeah, I
beliefs.
mean at that level it's like RPG source book level of like detail. And the reason that RPG source books have that level of detail is to give you all of that information to like build your sort of internal headcanon, because that's all that you've got. And obviously we've spent our childhood reading RPG splat books just for pleasure, and the same with extensive background settings for things like Warhammer and similar games like that. Actually, this does make me think, though, that there's another place. So I'm currently working on an extremely setting-specific game where the narratives are, in fact, almost pre-set, because I'm working on Pacific Command, which is a World War II carrier game set like the main scenarios that I'm currently writing. And I'm going to write probably two modes to play the game, but right now I'm writing a scenario for each of the major battles that happened during World War II in the Pacific. And so, the setting is extremely specific. There are only two forces to choose from. Those are the exact forces. The battles are specific and have like specific setups, and there is a an understood outcome because that's what happened in history. But of course, there's like there's alternate paths, and so it's a bit of a what if thing. But like the setup for Midway is the setup for Midway, and you can futz with like how you deploy and stuff. But like in that regard, like I'm currently writing an incredibly tightly set game where, although you get lots of freedom in force construction because it's a war game and I want to give you that sort of freedom, it's not a game that's saying, oh, and you can play this for sub hunting in the Atlantic in World War II. Oh, and you can use this for, pre-1800s naval combat. Like you can't use it for those things because, like a good short story, like a good indie game, it's like highly specific about what it's trying to tackle.
I mean, what's interesting is like to me, in my head, there's like a difference between the narrative of simulation and the narrative of like other narrative, because being simulationist in a war game is a narrative thing. You want the things to do what they're meant to do in the real world and tell the story that they are doing what they would do in the real world. And I feel like that's sort of separate from what I think of when I think of like writing narrative rules.
See, that's the fun thing about writing this historical game, is that what I think is fascinating about this particular theater of war is that the stories that people tell about these battles are about like two admirals making gambits, making bets, and then they didn't get the right information, and so they had to make a decision, and it was the wrong decision. And like, ultimately, when you read like a description of the Coral Sea battle, like, it's a very strong story about like two individuals playing cards at a table, but every card is like 1,000 sailors in 10 boats, and it's incredibly sort of, for me, it's a thrilling tale, and that capturing that narrative, capturing that story, is what the game is trying to do, to put you in a sort of platonic ideal of the sort of brain state that the storytelling about these battles ends up placing, you know, Nagumo into. And, you know, Nagumo probably wasn't doing that. He was thinking about all the different minutiae, and he had charts, and he was, you know, it was an incredibly difficult admin job, and he was using leadership, and he was having to be careful with his, you know, the way that he spoke to his superiors and managing his anger and stuff. And that's not what I'm trying to deliver. What I'm trying to deliver is the drama of the stories that we tell about these battles after the fact. So I think that for me, like, setting and what you're delivering in your game, like a big IP like GW is still extremely full of moments of story where they're like, okay, this is what it's going to feel like. You know, there's two Space Marines left and there's like a horde of greenskins, and like, make that happen on your table. Or like in Gaslands, it's like, you know, there are cars tearing around the corner and then one of them's just about to get through, and then they get through and you're like, yes, okay, those are the stories that I want to tell on the table. So I think for me, like, almost maybe the tightness of the narrative is how much are you explaining to people what it is that they're supposed to recreate on the table, because then they can go, yes, success, we achieved success in retelling this story or capturing that feeling. Whereas if you just give them an open toolbox, it's like, cool, here's a bunch of dice and tape measures, do whatever you want. Well, what do you want me to do? I don't know, whatever you want to do. Well, how will I know if I've succeeded?
Yeah, and I think that's one of the things about like creating a narrative and creating a narrative game that can be quite tricky, is that it relies on people coming with you, not just coming with you in a sort of like, oh, we're going to be narrative, don't be too tight on the rules, but coming with you on the specific narrative you're actually telling. Because it's like, there with Pacific Command, there's clearly going to be somebody somewhere is going to be like, well, I'm concerned about how boats work at a certain speed with certain guns. You're not letting me operate a boat, you know, of that period in that place, you know, the way that I thought it would operate. So this isn't simulating that battle. And it's like, okay, that's not the story I'm telling about this battle.
Right. And if I get to that point, then I haven't set up the game in the opening two pages correctly. I haven't brought people in with the like, hey, here's what's exciting. Do you want to be excited about this with me? Let's be excited about this together. Okay, here's a system for being excited and resolving exciting things in this way.
Yeah, and I think sometimes like simulationism sort of takes this opinion that, okay, if I give you the forces that guy had at that time, and they act in the way that the forces that guy had at that time, what will then emerge will be roughly the battle he fought through and the story he fought through. And that isn't necessarily true, because players are, you know, A, quite a perverse bunch, and B, you know, are able to analyze things in a way that even brilliant generals in the moment and at the time couldn't. And I think it's like, you know, as I say, I think sometimes it's about like a confidence as a game designer. And it's why sometimes you pick up games and they've got like, you know, 20 pages of setting and story and explanation at the front. And sometimes that feels to me like someone who's a bit nervous that the players aren't going to come with them on the thing that they are actually trying to do. And so they're like,
that's interesting.
I'll really lay it out. I'll really lay it on thick. I'll make them wade through all of this. And then when they reach the rules, they'll be in the right mindset and we can come together. And it takes a certain amount of, you know, nerve to just go, I'm going to give you like one paragraph and you're going to be with me after that paragraph or you're not. And then we're sort of off to the races.
I think there's one other element probably, and then we should think about drawing this conversation to a conclusion. But that makes me think of one game that I was reading recently, which had a deeply specific setting with lots of kind of well-researched details that drew on like well-researched sort of folklore things. But what happened was I ended up getting lost in the details of it, and it almost felt like I was going to be tested. Like if there's going to be an exam at the end of this, because the setting for this game that I'd only just encountered sort of felt like it was unloading an enormous amount of someone's kind of obsession for like 3 or 5 years about this world, without leaving me enough space to be like, okay, but what if I think that this sort of piece of mythology is slightly different? And what if I've got a slightly weird, like, no, there's a very specific, and so it's like, even in big IP, or in fact, particularly, I think one of the successful things about GW's big IP is that even within their big and incredibly well-defined IP, there are just massive blank spaces. Like, what's a Space Marine chapter? Well, there are lots of them and they're not all defined. Have your own. Okay, amazing. Like, what are orcs like? Well, they're these six different clans, but also there are mixes of them and you can also do whatever you want and they build whatever they want and it's everything's fine. Mm-hmm. And so I think, like, encountering this game recently, the specificness of the lore, it looked like it was trying to bring me in to the world, but it ended up shoving me away because I was like, well, this is too much detail and I can't learn it all. And you don't seem to be leaving me doors. There's no seats free for me.
Mm. No, absolutely. And I think that is kind of what this comes down to, where it's like figuring out that place where you're signposting them into your world rather than railroading them and shoving a story down their throat.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, I often find this, like, quite often I read games that happen to be like Greek or Roman mythology, and I end up feeling like I'm sitting there going, well, that's not how that particular god actually, you know, was meant to behave.
Well, actually,
you've got, well, and that's the thing, because once somebody says, okay, this is guy X and this is what he does, it's like, it's so hard to hit what everybody thinks Guy X did in that particular setting. It's why often, like, movie and book spin-off games are so unsatisfying.
Because it's like, why I'm absolutely terrified to release Pacific Command. Well, actually,
I think you'll find
dive bombers could travel 210 nautical miles.
I think it comes down to a sort of trying to have the confidence to, like, go, this is what I'm doing, you know, in as short a space as possible, and then start doing it. And people that with you are with you, and they're not, they probably never were going to be. And leaving enough space for people to find their own niche within your world and in your game, rather than like trying to give them a novel and go, well, pick one of these characters and be them the way I think they should be. Have fun, you know. And it's tricky to do. And I don't know that we've got any super good answers, but either way, you know,
but we've certainly talked about it. So there's that. We've talked
about it. We try to do it. And that's the best we can offer. If you've played a game with a quite sharp or specific narrative, did it put you off? Did it pull you in? If you've played one with a very loosey-goosey, sort of all over the place kind of narrative, and it gave you the space to create something very specific and very you, either way, drop down in the comments section and let us know what the game was, what the thing you created within that game that's super you and you're really happy with. While you're down there, like and subscribe like an absolute crazy person, and then swing over the Discord and tell us there about worlds you've created within games that you've really enjoyed, or worlds that created for you and put you off, or vice versa, and such like. But for now, from this episode of Rule of Carnage, I think it's going to be a thank you goodbye. So thank you goodbye.
Bye-bye. Thanks. Goodbye.